Avon did not ask Somerled about his past. He did wonder sometimes. There were so many things the boy did not know about, or just could not do. He had surely never looked after animals, for he seemed quite ignorant of how to treat them. He did not understand, until Avon explained it to him, that when a dog lowered its head and growled at you with flattened ears, you did not growl back or give it a kick. You must speak to it kindly, Avon told Somerled. You should not look it in the eye, just stay close and move slowly. You had to let the dog get used to you and learn you could be trusted. Somerled had thought about this for a little, and then he had asked, why? So Shaggy-coated Grip continued to growl and snap every time the boy went past, though the old dog let little children climb over his back and tug his rough coat with never a bark from him. Somerled did not like snow games. Sometimes, when all their tasks were done to Ingi's satisfaction, the boys and girls of the household would venture out onto the hillside to hurtle down the slopes on wooden sleds or pieces of birch bark. There were clear, bright days when the world seemed made anew in winter shades of twig grey and snowdrift white, under a sky as blue as a duck egg. Avon longed for the freedom of summer, but he loved this time as well. There was no feeling like speeding across the ice with bone skates strapped to his boots. The sheer thrill of the air whipping by, the pounding of the heart, the fierce joy of pushing himself to the limit and knowing he was invincible. This was what it would be like when he became a wolfskin and rode the prow of the longship. The same feeling, but 100 times stronger. He could not understand why Somerled would not join in these games. The other boys jeered at the newcomer and exchanged theories behind his back. Avon had tried to stop this, but he would not report it to Ingi. One did not tattletale. Besides, the boys were right. Somerled was a very odd child. What if he did fall off the sled or land on his bottom on the ice? That had happened to all of them. People might laugh, but it would be a laughter of understanding, not of scorn. Yet Somerled would not even try. He stood in the darkness under the trees and watched them, stone-faced. And if anyone asked him why he did not join in, he would either ignore the question completely or say he did not see any point in it. Part of Avond wanted to forget that fierce-eyed, small presence under the trees. Someone had made his own difficulties. Let him deal with the consequences. Part of Avond wanted to skate away over the dark mirror of the frozen river, to join the others in wild races down the hillside, to build forts of snow, or to venture out into the woods alone, spear in hand, seeking fresh meat for his mother's pot. But he promised Eric. So with decidedly mixed feelings, Avon devoted several lamplit evenings to fashioning a pair of skates from a piece of well-dried oak wood, iron-strong, with thongs of deer hide to fasten them to the boot soles. Somerled watched without comment. Acting on an instinct he could not have explained, Avon got up very early, shrugging on his shirt and trousers, his tunic, his sheepskin coat and hat of felted wool, as quickly as he could. For the cold seemed to seep into every corner of the longhouse. The place was quiet, the household still sleeping. He took his own skates and the new pair, and turned to wake Somerled. But, quiet as a shadow, the boy had risen from the wood shelf where they slept, and was putting on his own clothes, as if he did not need to be told. It seemed Avon's instinct had served him well. Ancient as he was, the dog Grip was ever keen to accompany the children on any expedition out of doors, as companion and protector. But today he seemed wary, growling softly as the two of them tiptoed into the hallway and out to the back door. Avon gave him a pat and pointed him back inside. Such an old dog was best resting by the embers of last night's fire, for the cold was enough to freeze the bollocks off you. He must be mad, taking Somerled out so early. Still, the boy followed willingly enough, asking not a single question. Down by the frozen river, in a morning darkness where the snow seemed blue and the sky red, where bushes and trees stretched out twigs like skinny fingers, frost-silvered, into the strange winter light, Somerled strapped on the new skates with no hesitation at all, stood up, slipped on the ice, fell flat on his back, got up again and, arms gripped firmly by Avon's powerful hands, began to move forward step by sliding step. That was how simple it was. All that was needed was that nobody else should be there. That astonished Avon. He himself was always first in any endeavor. Not reckless, exactly, just blithely confident of his own strength. He did get hurt from time to time, but thought little of it. It did not worry him if folk laughed at him. Not that they often did, since he tended to get things right the first time. And he was bigger than other people, which did help. He understood danger and guarded against it. He used his skis and his bow and his axe in the right way, cleanly and capably. Somerled's need for privacy confused him. If others' opinions mattered so much, why should Somerled trust him? He was, after all, the brother of a wolfskin. That might be expected to engender fear rather than trust in a scrap of a boy like this. As time passed, it became apparent to Avon that Somerled was attempting a kind of repayment in the limited ways available to him. Avon would fall into bed exhausted after a long day's work on the farm, and when he got up in the morning, his boots would be cleaned of mud, dried and waiting for him. Ingi would send her son out to the woodshed on a chill afternoon, and he would find Somerled there before him, frowning with effort as he loaded the logs onto the sledge. A choice cut of meat, served to their small visitor, would make its way unobtrusively to Avon's own platter. Avon learned quickly that one did not thank Somerled for these small kindnesses. Any attempt to do so would be greeted either by a blank stare, or a furious denial that any favour was intended. So he learned merely to accept, and was rewarded, occasionally, with a tentative half-smile, so fleeting, he wondered afterward, if he had only imagined it. Winter slowly mellowed into spring, and Avon learned a lesson in patience. Before the ice melted, Somerled could skate. Before the snow turned to slush, he could move about on skis without falling. He did not play games, but it was apparent that this was through choice rather than lack of ability. The other boy's eyes were more wary than scornful now, as they passed over his small, dark figure. He made no new friends. The milder weather brought fresh pastimes. It was easier to teach Somerled things now, because spring was a time for expeditions, and Avon was accustomed to going alone. Now, wherever Avon led, Somerled followed, and there were no others to watch and make fun of the boy's errors. Accepting that this season's ventures must be shorter and their pace slower, Avon set about ensuring his companion understood the essential rules of safety and the basic skills of hunting and trapping. Somerled learned to start a fire with no more than a scrap of flint and a handful of dry grass. He learned to build a shelter from fallen branches and strips of bark. He tried spear and bow and struggled with both, for he had little strength in the arms and shoulders, though his eye was keen. Avon set easy targets and praised each small success. They set snares for rabbits and brought home a steady supply. Somerled had a neat hand for gutting and skinning. Avon was uneasy sometimes. He could see Somerled was trying hard, and it was plain to all that the lad was growing stronger and healthier, thanks to fresh air and exercise and good feeding. But he remained very quiet, and had not lost his habit of blurting out strange remarks. Once, by the fire, they had listened to Ingi's tale of three brothers going to seek their fortunes, and had spoken of what the future might hold for themselves, and what they aspired to. One lad was eager to be a craftsman. He hoped to persuade Bjarni, the silversmith, to take him on. Another wanted to voyage far away to the lands of the south, where all the folk had skin as black as night. A third dreamed of catching the biggest fish that ever slipped in through the Skerry Guard.
"No need to ask Avon what he's going to do,"
grinned red-headed Sigurd, son of Ingi's senior housecarl.
"We all know that. If Thor accepts me, I'll be the bravest wolfskin that ever gave service," Avon said quietly, his gaze intent on the hearth fire. "First in attack, heedless of peril, fierce and unassailable. That's the only thing I want to do."
There was a little silence. Not one of them doubted that this wish would come true. It seemed to have been understood among them since Avon was little more than a baby.
I'm going to marry Ragnar and have 10 children, Sigurd joked.
And pigtailed Ragnar cuffed him, blushing scarlet.
What about you, Somerled?
Ingi asked kindly, perhaps feeling their young visitor had been overlooked.
What do you think you will become when you are a man?
Somerled looked up at her, his dark eyes opaque.
A king, he said.
There were snorts of ridicule. The boys rolled their eyes at one another. The girls giggled with embarrassment.
I don't think you can just be a king, Avon said gently. I mean, a king is even more important than a jarl. You'd have to be, well...
He hesitated. It was not possible to say you'd have to be strong, brave, respected. All the things Somerled was not.
Do you doubt me? Somerled snapped.
His small face all at once had the appearance of a savage creature at bay, the nostrils pinched, the eyes furious.
Oh, come on, Somerled, said Sigurd. You know you'll never be a king. That sort of thing's only in stories. It's a stupid thing to say.
Ingi opened her mouth, perhaps to announce that it was bedtime, but Somerled spoke first.
A man can be anything he wants to be, he said, fixing Sigurd with a withering look. You have still that lesson to learn. But you will not learn it, because you set your sights too low. One day you'll be a bitter old man, looking back on a life wasted. Worse, you won't even have the wit to recognize what you might have been. One day I will be a king, and you will still be a housecarl.
Sigurd muttered something and made a gesture with his fingers. Then Ingi ordered them briskly off to bed, and the strange conversation was over. Lying awake, Avon stared up at the thatch, where small creatures stirred with furtive rustling movements. After a while, he said,
I didn't mean it to sound like that, as if I thought you were lying. That wasn't what I meant. I was just trying to be... helpful, put in Somerled. Well, yes. I thought maybe you didn't understand how hard it would be to do what you said. Almost impossible, I should think.
Somerled sat up, his blankets held around him.
Nothing is impossible, Avent, he said in a small, precise voice. Not if a man wants it enough. How badly do you wish to be a wolfskin? More than anything in the world, Avent said. You know that, everyone does. Exactly, said Somerled. So, you will be a wolfskin, because you cannot see a future in which that does not occur. It is the same for me. I don't expect to achieve what I want without hard work and careful strategy, of course.
Avent was silenced. Somerled sounded extremely sure, so sure there was no challenging him.
You must not doubt me.
There was an intensity in that statement that was almost frightening.
I don't, Somerled, said Avent quietly.
And to his own surprise, he found that he meant it. The weather grew warmer, and Avon taught Somerled to swim. The boy practiced this new skill, as he did all the others, doggedly, methodically, with no sign of enjoyment. He splashed about, making a gradual, floundering progress through the chilly waters of the fjord, while Avon swam and dived and practiced holding his breath underwater. It seemed Somerled learned things not because he wanted to, but because he believed he must. There was one exception, and it unsettled Avent. They set snares for rabbit or hare, clever nooses of cord placed so the quarry would wander in unawares and be caught by neck or limb, unable to free itself from the constricting loop. Usually the creatures would be dead by the time the boys checked the snare, but sometimes they were still alive, straining wild-eyed against the cord, or hunched, staring at their captors with a knowledge of death on their small faces. Avon preferred it when they were dead. It was better if the snare went around the neck. But he bore a short, heavy club and used it efficiently when he needed to. Somerled would not employ the club. He checked his own snares, and Avon came across him sitting there quite still, watching with grave interest the small, struggling animal whose frantic efforts to free itself had worn the flesh of its trapped leg almost to the bone. Perhaps Somerled was waiting for that moment he had once spoken of, a turning point when it all went dark. Avon shivered, and then reached across and administered the merciful stroke of death. And Somerled was suddenly very angry indeed.
"Why did you do that? This one's mine!"
Avon looked into the dark, fierce eyes and swallowed.
"There's no need to keep them alive," he ventured cautiously. "It hurts them, you know, being strung up. This is the way it's done. It's the way I always do it."
"And this is the way I do it," said Somerled coldly. "Tend to your own snares."
"Suit yourself," said Avond, and then bent toward the limp bundle of grey fur, peering more closely. "What knot did you use?" he asked.
"Ah," said Somerled.
"You noticed. Want me to show you?"
Deftly, his fingers moved on the hempen cord, flicking under, teasing out the bloodied ends, until the complex rosette that formed the knot was unmade.
"I invented this. You'll find it quite useful, I think. It tightens swiftly at first, and then more gradually, and it's very hard indeed to undo unless you know the trick. Here, watch me."
It was a clever knot, and decorative. Avond practiced it several times until he could remember the cunning sequence of under, over, across, through and around, which formed the flower-like result. It would have its uses, certainly, but...
"I prefer the old one for a snare," he commented. "Quicker and cleaner." "Maybe."
Somerled glanced at him sideways.
"But this is much more interesting."
The season moved on, and a message came to Hammersby that visitors were on the way. Eirik and Håkon, travelling from the north back to the Jarl's court at Freyrsfjord. They'd be home for only one night. Ingi ordered a sheep slaughtered and set her house calves to baking. Eivind was saddling a horse, getting ready to ride out to meet his brother. In his mind was a joyful reunion on the track that skirted the fjord, a companionable ride back up the hillside while the two wolfskins gave him all the news, then an evening's feasting and tales. He could hardly keep the grin off his face. Somerled stood silent in the stable doorway, watching him intently. Avond had gotten used to Somerled being always there, a still shadow, his eyes following his every move. At first this had been deeply unsettling. Now he was so accustomed to it that he thought he might almost miss the other boy if he were not constantly present.
"I shouldn't be long," Avon said a little awkwardly. "It's all right."
Somerled's voice was level, self-contained.
"I know your brother means a lot to you. He is a wolfskin. You aspire to be just like him. I can understand that." "I'm sorry."
Avond fell silent, not at all sure how to finish.
"Off you go," Somerled said. "I can see every moment's delay chafes you. Go on." "I'll see you later, then."
Avond swung up onto the horse, the prospect of a gallop down the broad path under the firs, already driving Somerled from his thoughts.
"Avond!"
It was his mother's voice. And a moment later Ingi appeared from the longhouse, drying her hands on her apron.
"What is it, mother?"
"I'm sorry, son. I know you wanted to ride down to the fjord and meet them. But I need you to go over to Snorri Erlandsson's. I've two milk cows ailing now, and I need him to have a look at them before another night passes. If we don't nip this in the bud, the whole herd will be at risk. I'm sorry, Avond."
Ingi had seen the expression on her son's face.
"All the other boys are out helping with ploughing, and I just can't spare anyone else."
"It's all right, mother. Of course I'll go, Davin said, swallowing his disappointment. The dairy herd was a substantial part of their livelihood. A chance to greet the wolfskins on his own was nothing to this. He tried hard not to look as if it mattered to him.
I'll go.
Ingi and Avon turned equally surprised faces towards Somerled. He had never ridden so far on his own. More significantly, he had never before volunteered for a task, though when asked, he performed them in acquiescent, expressionless silence.
I don't think, Ingi began.
It's too far.
Avon spoke at the same time. Somerled looked at them, and they fell silent at the implacable darkness of those eyes and the small, pale face.
I said I'll go. I know the way. I think I can be relied upon to deliver a simple message about some cows.
Ingi glanced at Eivind, brows raised.
Better if you go, Eivind, she said. It's a long way and not an easy ride.
No, said Somerled. I will go. Eivind will ride down to meet his brother. Should I take the black mare or the grey pony?
I don't know if...
Ingi began, clearly taken aback. Her word was law throughout Hammersby.
Take the grey, Avon said. She's more reliable. And go by the upper track. It's quicker in dry weather.
He looked at his mother.
You can trust Somerled, he added.
What is this, a conspiracy?
Ingi glanced from one boy to the other, a little frown on her brow.
Very well, then, off you go. Somerled, are you sure you know the cattle doctor's house? You must cross right over to the southernmost grazing fields, and then... You do? Good. You can ride back with Snorri, and you should be home in time for supper. And you!
She addressed her youngest son.
Straight there and straight back, and be glad you have such a loyal friend.
I am, Avon said, and winked at Somerled.
Somerled's blank expression did not change. He turned his back and went to fetch the pony's blanket saddle.
Avon rode off down the hill, eager for wolfskin talk and wolfskin news. News there was aplenty. Eirik and Håkon told some on the ride up the hill to Hammersby, and more that evening over the fine supper Ingi's household had prepared for them.
Carl was there, and Snorri the cattle doctor, who had administered a dose to the breeding cows, and pronounced himself satisfied with their general health.
Somerled sat at table, neat and quiet, eating little, speaking little, listening, always listening.
When he'd ridden in with Snorri, Avon had gone out to thank him, but Somerled had simply raised his brows and asked, for what? Sometimes there was no understanding the boy. His mind just didn't seem to work like other people's. Eirik was telling the household how the two wolfskins had travelled north to assist Ulf with some delicate business, and were now headed back to Jarl Magnus's court, and then away on the Spring Viking. This season Ulf planned to take one of Magnus's ships far south, into a territory more frequently raided by the men of Jutland. There would be competition. Things were likely to get interesting, Eirik said with some relish. Ulf would be at Hammersby by the next full moon, to collect Somerled and take him to court before setting off on the voyage. Ulf would surely be grateful to Ingi and Eivind, for Somerled was looking very well indeed. Maybe they'd make a wolfskin out of him too, Eirik added with a grin. But Somerled was not smiling. Like a small creature of the shadows, he slipped away from the room without a word, and when Eivind went out later to find him, the boy was lying in bed, curled up tightly with the blanket over his face.
Somerled.
There was no response.
Somerled, I know you're not asleep. What's wrong?
Nothing.
The voice was muffled.
Why would anything be wrong? I just thought, go away, Eivind. I'm trying to sleep.
It would have been far easier to obey and go back out to the hall where his family and their guests still sat over ale and good talk. Somehow Eivind found he could not do that.
We don't have to talk about it, if you don't want to, he said quietly,
sitting down on the sleeping platform next to Somerled.
But I'll stay here anyway.
There was a long silence.
You don't have to. Somerled's voice was a whisper.
I know, Avon said. Friends don't help each other because they have to. They do it because they want to.
After a while, Somerled spoke again. Avon could tell he was trying hard not to cry.
Avon?
Hmm?
This is something you can't fix. Nobody can.
Avon could think of nothing to say. The hopeless finality of the boy's tone silenced him.
I know you mean well, said Somerled thinly.
It was the closest he had ever come to a thank you. The time passed swiftly. Still they swam and explored and hunted, but something had changed. Somerled was pushing himself harder, doing his best to keep up and to get everything right, as if to master as much as he could before he must leave. But he had gone quiet again, and that strange darkness was back in his eyes. It was not possible to talk to him about it, for every attempt was cut off by a furious denial of any problem. So Avon kept quiet and concentrated on teaching, since learning things was the purpose of Somerled's visit. When it was close to full moon and the weather set fair, they journeyed far into the woods and built a shelter. They stayed there 3 days. On the third day, they armed themselves with spears and tracked a wild boar, and at dusk they cornered and killed it. It was Avon's throw that pierced the creature's heart, but Somerled's spear had taken it in the belly and slowed it for the final stroke. They had done it together. That night they sat by their small fire in a clearing encircled by dark firs, tall as star-crowned giants. They roasted a little of the meat. The rest, neatly butchered, they would carry home tomorrow in their packs.
You did well, Avon said.
Somerled chewed on his strip of meat, saying nothing.
I mean it. When you first came here, you could never have done that. Most of the boys couldn't do it. They'd be scared of the dark, of wolves, of trolls, scared the spear might miss. But you did it. Stop trying to make me feel better, Somerled muttered.
There was a considerable silence while Avon thought about this remark.
I wish you'd tell me what's wrong, he said eventually. That's the trouble with you.
Somerled's voice was uneven.
You're so good at everything, and yet you're stupid. You're so stupid you don't even know how stupid you are. Right, said Avon after a moment.
He threw the rest of his meat on the fire, pulled his blanket around him and lay down to sleep. With Somerled, sometimes there seemed to be no point in trying to understand. There was silence for a while, and he began to feel drowsy after the long day. His limbs ached with weariness, but it was a good feeling. The sort of feeling that went with the cool, clean air of the woodland and the smell of smoke from the campfire, and the sight of the dark, jeweled sky far above them. He imagined his mother's smile in the morning when they returned home with their trophy.
Nobody cares.
Somerled's voice came out of the darkness like a whisper of a small, restless ghost.
Nobody cares what happens to me. What?
Avon rolled over sleepily.
My brother left me here to punish me. Now he's taking me away to punish me. But...
Avon struggled to get his thoughts in order.
Isn't going to court good if you want to be, you know, what you said?
There was a silence.
How could you understand? Asked Somerled bitterly. I am trying, said Avon, popping himself up on one elbow.
He could not see Somerled's face. The boy had his back to him.
You don't care either, Somerled said in
a voice no louder than a rustle of wind in the bushes.
You're just counting the days until I'm gone. Then you'll go out with Sigurd and the others and have a good laugh about me, and do your swimming and hunting and diving, and be pleased you haven't got me to drag along, slowing you down.
This was true, most of it. Already in his head, Eivind had planned a swim across the Serpent's Neck, and a run to the top of Setter's Crag, a trip Somerled could never have managed. He spoke carefully.
You know how much I want to be a wolfskin. I'm too young now. They won't even let me do the trial until I'm 15. It's hard to wait. 3 years seems forever. It's been good having you here. You've kept me busy, given me things to do. An amusement.
Somerled's tone was cold.
A little diversion. You know I don't mean that, said Eivind, sitting up.
Still, the other boy's face was obstinately turned away.
Have I ever laughed at you even once? You're my friend, Somerled.
He heard the indrawn breath and wondered if Somerled were weeping. Then his voice came, harsh and intense.
Then prove it. Prove it? How?
Eivind was perplexed. Somerled turned. He had his hunting knife in his hand, and his left sleeve was rolled back. As Eivind stared, transfixed, he scored a neat line in the white skin of the forearm, a wound that flowed with fresh blood from wrist to elbow. Somerled's face was like a war mask, the mouth hard, the eyes fierce with challenge.
Swear it in blood!
His voice rang in Eivind's ears, like the call of a solemn bell or some trumpet of doom, like a sound from an old tale.
Swear we'll be like brothers forever. Prove to me you're not lying.
And when Eivind hesitated, staring as the blood began to trickle from Somerled's arm onto the blanket and descend in runnels to be lost on the forest floor, Somerled's eyes grew chill, his face still tighter.
I knew you wouldn't, he said.
His tone did not mirror his expression. It was the voice of a lonely child who fights to hold back tears. Eivind got up and took the knife from Somerled's hands. Not allowing himself to think too hard, he bared his own left arm, took a breath, and cut neatly. Not too deep, or it would be hard to explain, but deep enough so the blood would flow freely. It hurt, but he knew how to deal with pain. He lifted his arm and laid it against Somerled's, and they clasped hands as their blood mingled and dripped in the glow of the fire.
Now swear, Somerled whispered.
It seemed to Eivind that the sound of Somerled's voice was echoed in the rustle of the undergrowth around them, and the restless sigh of the wind in the high branches of the firs.
What do I say?
Hissed Eivind, though there was indeed no need for hush since they were quite alone.
Say what I say. Say, I swear an oath that you are my brother from this day on, my brother in the blood that we share. I swear.
Eivind repeated the strange, solemn words, wondering why his heart was pounding thus, and his skin breaking out in a cold sweat. After all, he was only reassuring the poor lad that he was not quite friendless. That was all this was.
Faithful to each other above all other earthly vows. Loyal to each other before all other earthly allegiances, even until death.
Even until death.
They let go. The blood was a sticky mess, and Eivind rummaged in his pack for scraps of linen to use as a binding. Wounds of one kind or another were common enough when hunting, and he always came well prepared.
Here,
he said, passing an old cloth to Somerled.
Tear it up. Wrap it around.
Somerled bandaged his own arm neatly, finishing it off one-handed with a little knot that resembled a flower.
I know what you want to be, he said,
his voice quite calm now.
That's why I put in that part, earthly vows. I understand your first promise must be to Thor, but your next is to me. When I am a king, you will be first among my wolfskins, my war leader and my principal bodyguard. There will always be a place for you, if you are loyal. thank you, said Eivind, trying to conceal his surprise. The whole thing had confused him. He would not think of the story of Niall and Brynjolf, which he had hated so much. This was a gesture of goodwill, no more. Somerled was lonely. He could hardly let the boy go away thinking he hadn't a single ally. When Somerled grew a bit older, he'd realize his grand plans were foolish, something that was all in his head and nothing to do with the real world. In the meantime, the lad may as well dream his dreams.
Good night, Somerled, Eivind said. Good night.
The small, serious voice came back through the darkness. Eivind lay down again and, for all the throbbing of his arm, he was soon overtaken by the exhaustion of a day spent stretching his body to the full, and fell asleep. But Somerled sat a long while by the fire, his dark eyes fixed on a place far beyond the farthest margin of clearing, or forest, or wide hillside, a place that only he could see. He held his bandaged arm against his chest, as if it gave him some comfort. Only the gods heard the words he whispered into the darkness. Chapter 2 Somerled departed with no sign of anger and no trace of tears. He thanked Ingi in tight, formal words. He glanced at Eivind and touched his right hand briefly to the inside of his left forearm as if to say, "Don't forget." Then, as abruptly as he had arrived, Somerled was gone. A vow was a vow, but it was easy to forget when the days were warm and bright, and there were so many things to do, wrestling or swimming, or playing a game they called Battlefield, which involved a very hard ball of straw-packed oxhide and ashwood paddles. Battlefield led to bruises and fierce rivalries, and on occasion broken bones. When Eivind went hunting, he took Sigurd or Knut, or one of the other boys with him, and they did well. He swam across the Serpent's Neck and back again, without coming up for breath. In the evenings he worked with knife and wood, and made a little weaving tablet with a border of dogs on it. He thought he might give this to Ragnar, who did not have one of her own. But he remembered Sigurd's joke about 10 children, and he noticed the way Sigurd had stopped pulling Ragnar's pigtails, and now made chains of flowers for her instead, and he slipped the small carving away in his pocket. 3 years had seemed forever when Eivind was not quite 12, but the seasons passed quickly enough. Sometimes Eirik would visit, and now, as Eivind grew closer to being a man, his brother began to teach him new skills. There were some techniques you could not practice on a friend, in case you took it too far and maimed or killed him. A little twist of the neck, a thumb applied very specifically, a particular jab to the lower back, or a squeeze to the groin. And there were refinements in the use of weapons. A wolfskin had to be able to be 2 men, Eirik told him as they rehearsed axe fights against the bole of a great pine in the forest, well out of sight of the house. One was the warrior, who leapt first from the longship's prow, screaming Thor's name, so fearsome of aspect, so wild of manner that none dared stand against him. That was the crazy man all feared, the frenzied fighter reputed to chew holes in his own shield. So fierce was his rage for battle. That was one man and one side of it, but a wolfskin could not be all raw courage and no skill. His life was likely to be short enough. There was no need to let pure stupidity make it any shorter. In between the Viking seasons were times when other qualities came into use. The ability to guard one's nobleman and patron, to fight his feuds on land, and to play hard as well. For Jarl liked to see his chosen band of elite warriors in demonstrations of skill, be it in horse racing or wrestling or challenges of other kinds. So, said Eirik, Eivind had better polish up his swordplay and his mastery of staves, and try unarmed combat with someone closer to his own size and strength than those puny lads down at the farm. The two brothers pitted themselves one against the other, and Eirik won every time, which was only to be expected. Still, he tended to be a touch breathless at the end of a bout, and he watched his younger brother with the trace of a smile, as if something long suspected were being proven true.
In the autumn, the dark thrall woman, Oksana, had another fair-haired babe at the breast. In the following spring, Somerled came back. This time he was visiting at his own request, until his brother should return from another expedition southward toward the kingdom of the Franks. If Ulf did well, the silver he brought home would buy the services of fine boat builders and bring his ocean-going longship closer to completion. He might lay aside enough to purchase the skills of a master navigator. He might even begin assembling his own force of wolfskins. A good share of the season's booty would go to the Jarl in tribute, of course. But that was part of the whole process, Somerled explained. One must keep the Jarl content, if one might need his support in future. Such a venture required long and careful planning. So Somerled was back, taller, paler, still unsmiling. His clothes were finer. He wore a woolen tunic whose border was pricked out with glinting metallic threads, and his cloak was fastened by a heavy silver brooch in the shape of a dragon's head. His dark hair was neatly combed and held back by a band of the same metallic braid. He watched much and spoke little. As soon as he arrived, the other lads stopped asking Eivind if he would play battlefield or take them through the forest for deer. It was assumed, with not a word spoken, that for the duration of his stay, Somerled would be Eivind's only companion. Somerled had changed. It was apparent he had not been wasting his time at court, reluctant as he had been to go there. The Jarl had a thrall in his household who had been a scholar far off in hot eastern lands, and from this man Somerled was learning to draw charts and interpret the stars, to fashion verses and to play games. At Hammersby he found a willing partner in Avon's eldest brother. Carl loved games, not the battlefield kind, but the sort one played with a small square board and a set of finely carven pieces. His opponent was usually one of the senior housecarls, who had a shrewd eye for such pastimes. Carl had tried to teach Eivind the knack of it over the long evenings of several winters, but somehow Eivind could not get his mind around the intricacies of the strategy. He did not know how Carl could see 3, 4, 7 moves ahead and plan cunning attack and counterattack. In the end, Carl gave up, telling his brother with a grin that he'd never learn because he thought like a wolfskin, his only tactic being to charge straight in, axe whirling, and mow down the opposition. This remark was probably intended as criticism, but to Eivind it seemed like praise. Carl was delighted then when Somerled expressed a willingness to play. They started with the game that had pegs in little holes, 7x7, and before long Carl was maneuvered off the board. They played the one with pieces in black and in green. Carl had the 16 small soldiers and Somerled the 8, lined up behind a tiny king in gleaming soapstone. That game took longer. At first Carl grinned and joked, then he frowned and mopped his brow. Later he drank ale, cursing, and finally he admitted defeat. Somerled did none of those things. He played games as he did everything else, silently, watchfully, his dark eyes giving nothing away. At the end he gathered up the pieces neatly, putting them back in their small calfskin bag. He nodded at Carl, unsmiling. "You play well for a farmer," said Somerled. They went hunting, they set snares, they swam in the river or in the cold waters of the fjord. Somerled had not forgotten what Eivind had taught him, and he learned more. He would never be a warrior, that much was clear. With his new tricks learned from Eirik, and his superior size and strength, Eivind was as far beyond his friend in physical skills as a master craftsman is beyond the rawest apprentice. But at least, under his tutelage, Somerled learned to defend himself. If he ever had to live rough, he would be able to find his own food and shelter. They built a platform together in the upper branches of a sturdy oak, a secret refuge that could be reached only by means of a knotted rope. The floor was of lashed poles, the walls of wattles, the roof open to the stars. It was very high. Once, during the construction, Somerled had slipped and nearly fallen. He clung by one hand. His fingers all that prevented a rapid descent into instant oblivion on the forest floor. Eivind had managed to grip his arms and haul him to safety. Near sunset, as they sat on their high perch, listening to the cries of homing birds, Eivind saw Somaled scratching something on the bark with his hunting knife.
"What are you doing?" he asked. "You'll blunt the edge."
Somaled did not answer. The knife was making a neat, irregular pattern of vertical lines and slanting cross-strokes, like a row of little trees, each with one or two or three branches.
"Somaled, what is that?"
The steady movement of the knife continued. Somaled spoke without turning.
"It says here, two brothers made this house. Somaled carved these runes."
Evan's jaw dropped.
"You mean you can write?" he breathed in astonishment. "I haven't been wasting my time," Somaled said casually, incising a neat pair of parallel lines against one small upstroke. "A man needs certain skills to advance in life. This is one of them. I can read too, but this is not everyday writing, Eivind. Here, let me show you."
Patiently, he went along the line of tidy markings, explaining what each meant and why.
"They are not ordinary runes, you understand, but another kind, a secret kind. Even among scholars, few understand them. The branches are the clue, a sort of pointer."
His explanation was careful and slow, but after a while he stopped. Looking at Eivind, he did not smile exactly. A real smile from Somaled was a rare event. But his expression softened.
"I'm sorry," confessed Eivind ruefully. "I just don't understand."
It was beginning to come to him that perhaps his friend was very clever indeed. So clever that Eivind might never quite comprehend him.
"It's all right, Eivind," said Somaled. "You don't need to know these things. It's different for me. To be what I must be, I have to learn everything. Reading, writing, and games, archery, rowing, and skiing, probably even smithcraft. And I must not forget music and the fashioning of verses. Without the mastery of these, a man cannot call himself a leader. And I don't have long."
Eivind sat back, round-eyed. He said nothing.
"You don't believe I can do it," Somaled said flatly. "On the contrary," Eivind spoke in tones of awe. "I'm beginning to believe you can do anything you put your mind to."
He watched as his friend carved the last rune and lowered the knife.
"It looks very fine," he added.
Something in his tone caught Somerled's attention.
"What is it?" "I..."
Eivind was unusually hesitant.
"I'm wondering if..."
"What?"
"You want to make your mark here too?"
"You should, brother. For this belongs to the two of us. Our secret."
"I would like to learn how to make my name. Properly, in these signs, not just a cross. It looks difficult. I'm not sure if I could do it."
"We'll practice it here, on the boards, until you have it. Then on the tree. Get your own knife and copy me."
Eivind was to remember, in later years, how patient Somaled was with him that day, taking him through each upright, each cross-stroke, letting him try it slowly, correcting each error with kindness, until Eivind could inscribe a passable version of the runes that made his name on the bole of the great tree. For the space of that lesson, it seemed to Eivind that Somaled became a different boy, one who could find joy in sharing what he knew, one who could give as well as take. It was a brief enough time, but Eivind never forgot it. Much later, after Somaled had returned to the south, Eivind would climb up to the treehouse sometimes and study the inscription in the bark. He would run his finger over the signs, just the part of it he knew said Eivind. For the rest of it he was not able to decipher.
It seemed to him a proud thing for a man to be able to write his name. As for the other part, that stood as a reminder of the vow he had sworn. For in those runes, Somaled had set down the pact between them. Two brothers. That same summer, Eivind and Somaled visited the Catwoman in her strange small hut above the tree line, near the top of Bleak Hill. The seer had another name, but folk always called her the Catwoman, as if she were only part human. The old woman's powers were both feared and respected. She received visitors only when she chose. Carl went up sometimes to chop wood and deliver a sack of grain or a round of cheese. Occasionally the woman ventured down the mountain for some festival or gathering, and they said if she was given enough ale, she would chant to the spirits until her eyes rolled back in her head, and she'd speak in a strange voice and tell of what the future held. Men liked to hear their destinies. Farmers were eager for tidings of seasons to come. Fishermen wanted advanced notions of storms. Merchants were keen for predictions of where the best bargains might be sealed. The Catwoman did not always tell good news, but her warnings were useful, and she was received with great respect and gifts. Eivind would have preferred to spend the day hunting, but when Somaled had heard about the seer, there was no stopping him. He must go there before Ulf came for him again. He must know what she had to tell. Besides, it was an adventure. Ingi gave them a little tub of sweet butter to take, and eggs nestled in a bag of down. The weather was fair and bright, but chill for the season. It was a long journey, a full day there and back. They made their way up beyond the tree line and out onto the rocky hillside. Eivind slowed his pace to accommodate Somaled, but not as much as he would once have done. They saw deer moving silently down in the woods, and an eagle overhead. But there was no hunting. This expedition sought only knowledge. From the narrowed intensity of Somaled's eyes, Eivind thought he knew what it was his friend wanted to hear, but he held his tongue. One did not question Somaled at such times, unless one wanted a response that stung like a whip. The Catwoman's hut was turf-covered, set low, almost as if the earth had chosen to grow up around it. A small goat grazed on the roof. From the woodpile, a monstrous, thick-necked cat watched them through slanting yellow eyes. Black chickens scattered, squawking. She wouldn't be needing eggs then. From a hole in the turf, a thin plume of smoke rose. Eivind called out politely, then stooped to go in. The doorway was hung with a strip of coarse cloth, no more. Inside, the place was dark and small, and crammed with objects strange and wonderful, bizarre and magical. Masks hung on the walls, faces that were beautiful, wild, blank-eyed, dangerous. The bones of a long, thin creature were laid out neatly on a stone shelf. An iron pot steamed on the central hearth. There was an odd, pungent smell. Not unpleasant exactly. Just the sort of odor that renders one suddenly, sharply awake. Somaled came in behind him and stopped. "We've brought some butter and a few eggs," Eivind said politely. "My mother sent them. Ingi, that is." In the shadows beyond the fire, the Catwoman stirred. She rose to her feet and moved forward until the light from the smoke hole fell on her face, a face remarkably unlined for one so old. Her skin was very white as the long hair that fell unbound below the strange cap she wore, which seemed made of dark skin on the outside and pale fur inside. Her eyes were like fine blue glass. Around her neck, she had a string of beads that almost matched them. As she moved, her gown made a faint tinkling sound, as if it were hung with tiny bells.
"Perhaps you don't want the eggs, though," Eivind added. "I see you have your own chickens."
"Gifts are welcome," said the Catwoman, motioning to a dresser of stone slabs by the far wall. "You can set them there, if you will. Your mother is a kind woman. Your brothers came here. I remember them."
Avon smiled, hoping he did not appear too nervous.
I hear you tell fortunes. I want you to tell mine, Somerled said abruptly. I hope you do not lie or invent tales when your skills desert you. It is a calling that attracts cheats.
Somerled,
Avon hissed, seeing the change come over the old woman's features. One did not offend a seer. Surely even Somerled knew that.
I do not perform at folks' beck and call, like some fairground creature, said the catwoman quietly.
She turned to Avent.
This is no brother, she observed.
I'm sorry. His name is Somerled. He is my friend, who comes to stay with us sometimes. We were hoping, that is...
The catwoman gave a faint smile.
I have told their future, the warrior and the farmer, and I will do no less for you. But I owe your friend nothing.
Out of the corner of his eye, Avon saw Somerled's mouth tighten.
I have another gift for you, if you'll accept it, Avon said, quickly, before Somerled could speak again and make matters worse.
I made this. Perhaps you might like it.
From his pocket he drew out the weaving tablet he'd carved. Now that he looked at it, he could see that the little dogs were not as regular as they should be, some of their expressions more comic than noble. He hoped she would not be offended.
It's not a bribe or a payment, he added hastily. I know such knowledge can never be paid for, but you can have it if you want.
The catwoman sighed, an odd sort of sigh, as if she bore a burden too heavy for her. Then she took the small thing from his hands, touching the pattern with a finger lightly.
Send your friend outside, she said.
Somerled glowered.
Send him outside. Such tellings are private. You know that. You first, then the other.
In an instant, Somerled was gone. There was nothing there but a sort of angry vibration where he had stood. The catwoman did not chant or roll her eyes, or call on the spirits. She sat by the fire and bade Avent sit by her.
Give me your hand, Avent. You are grown as tall as your brothers, like a strong young tree. What is it you want to hear so badly? Let us light the candles, one on this side, one on the other, and throw a pinch of this on the fire. Ah, that's better. Now, let me see you in the light. A fine young man. There's a great gift for kindness in you. I see it in your eyes, a rare gift, and yet your path will take you far from such ways. What do you want to know, Avent?
Will I be a wolfskin? Will I pass those tests?
His words tumbled over each other in their eagerness to get out.
And when? How long must I wait?
He thought she would not speak at all, so long she took to answer. She gazed at his palm and into his eyes, and then at the candle flame, and the look on her face was almost pity. His heart shrank. She had seen that he would fail, and was not prepared to speak it.
Tell me, he blurted out finally. Tell me, whatever it is.
The catwoman sighed again and blinked, as if returning from a far place.
Oh, yes, you'll swing your axe in the very forefront of it, lad. A cleaver of skulls, a smiter of the strongest, fearless and proud. The best among them you'll be. And soon, more than 1 year, less than 2, I think. Thor has his mark on you. He had from the first.
Avon could feel the grin stretching across his face and the proud beating of his heart.
Thank you. Oh, thank you.
That's not all.
It's all that matters to me. It's all I want, all I ever wanted.